because you don't want to come to us and get set up with a full grazing system and get locked into that system and then realize 2 years down the road that the system doesn't work right for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we tried to do a lot of things when we first started and had a lot of ideas on what we wanted to do and what farming would look like. And some things we like got more passionate about and did better and are still doing, and a lot of things we dropped.
Welcome to the 356th installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. So here's a chicken or the egg situation to ponder. When you're launching a farming operation, when should you approach the local Natural Resources Conservation Service office about applying for funding to set up infrastructure such as a rotational grazing system? It might be tempting to apply for a contract through the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, also known as EQIP, right from the get-go. So when you buy that first beef cow or ewe, they're ready to be plopped into the paddocks where they'll immediately start turning grass into protein. Not so fast, says Klaus Zimmerman Mayo and Emily Hansen. Klaus and Emily operate Whetstone Farm, a vegetable and grass-based cattle and sheep enterprise in western Wisconsin's Polk County. They market via CSA, Farmers Market, and direct-to-consumer sales. They launched the farm on 40 acres a decade ago, and 2 years ago added another 135 acres. Over the years, the operation has brought together multiple partners and enterprises. It's now run as a collaborative farm consisting of several partners. Emily and Klaus recently hosted a field day sponsored by Go Farm Connect, a farmer-led initiative that works to build relationships between non-traditional farmers and agricultural support agencies such as the NRCS and Farm Service Agency. Other sponsors of the field day were the USDA and Renewing the Countryside. The couple led field day participants on a tour of their rotational grazing system, as well as their vegetable plots and high tunnel system. A number of beginning farmers and prospective farmers were present, and it was clear they were excited by the fact that Emily and Klaus had been able to set up the grazing system and hoop house using NRCS EQIP funds. They're also receiving payments to conduct prescribed conservation grazing on the farm. But the farmers made it clear that before they applied for funding from the NRCS, they tried out a few enterprises and ways of running them first. That was important, given that they ended up dumping some of those enterprises when they didn't work out financially and from a management point of view. Figuring out which enterprises you're going to stick with in the long term is particularly important when considering applying for something like a multi-year prescribed grazing contract. It's critical to know what kind of farming you want to do and how you want to do it before establishing the kind of infrastructure that could lock you into a certain system for years down the road, advised the farmers. Brandon Wyarda agrees with this trial and error approach. He's an NRCS resource conservationist for Wisconsin's Pierce, St. Croix, Polk, Burnett, and Washburn counties. During a field day, he talked about the need for beginning farmers to feel out the situation before jumping into all the paperwork required to receive funding for major infrastructure improvements. He also reminded participants that the NRCS's priority is to fund on-farm projects that help address conservation issues, such as water quality and soil health. That's why it's important for applicants to look around their farm and figure out what kind of NRCS-funded infrastructure can help them be more viable economically, agronomically, and environmentally. After the field day, I talked to Klaus and Brandon about the need to do a little trial and error before signing on the dotted line. They also offered up other bits of advice for beginning farmers who are looking to procure financial support as they build up their operations infrastructure. As they both make clear, there's a lot of good information available on the internet, but sometimes you just got to pick up the phone and start asking questions. So Klaus, you have taken advantage of some really good programs through NRCS as well as FSA once you got established here that kind of helped you along. Can you talk a little bit about some of the different, I guess, infrastructure you've been able to set up through some of these programs?
Sure. The first program that we participate in through the EQIP program with NRCS was for putting up a high tunnel for vegetable production. There's a 96 foot by 30 foot high tunnel that we do in-ground vegetable production in. So basically season extension and I guess just increasing quality and having more control over summer production, especially for some of those crops like tomatoes, which struggle more outside with a variety of factors, including weather and disease and all that. We also have put in quite a bit of fencing for our livestock for doing rotational grazing, which we've been doing. And so we've did that first on this original 40 that we've been on for 10 years. We put in quite a bit of interior fencing. There are definitely different loopholes and different requirements they have for different things. So because that was already in pasture, they wouldn't do perimeter fencing for us. So we had to put up perimeter fencing, but they helped with our interior fencing for subdividing and basically doing these sort of like long lanes that we could then subdivide into smaller paddocks depending on what our needs are. And then we did a very similar program across the street at the 135 acres that we got. Well, not on all of that, but there was about 35 acres of cropland that we've converted into pasture. So they helped, NRCS helped pay for seeding that down, buying the seed, getting it planted, and then putting fencing in for very similar interior fencing. And we did get some exterior fencing there because we were converting cropland into pasture. And this is all like cost share thing. They have certain formulas for how much they pay based on like the footage of fencing you're putting in or whatever. We also have water lines that we put in over there, which has been extremely helpful as far as getting water out to animals grazing on pasture, where in the past we've had to pretty much haul water to animals every day, which was a lot of work and a lot of wear and tear on equipment and just like a lot of, labor is just a huge thing. That these programs have been hugely helpful for setting up infrastructure for those things. Yeah, and then we're also doing prescribed grazing. They have some programs for that, for doing rotational grazing on all this. It's basically on the acreage that we've been, that they helped with the infrastructure with. They're also doing prescribed grazing, which is basically a help pay for us doing that more. It's a conservation type of grazing system that we're moving them every single day, and that is a lot of labor, and I think it's kind of helps offset a lot of that.
Yeah, that was neat. We went out and measured some of your forage, and so that prescribed grazing system, it's separate from getting the infrastructure set up. It's you're kind of reporting into the NRCS that you are doing daily rotations or whatever, or that you're managing that perennial plant system in a conservation based way.
Yeah, that's correct. We've got our animals that we've got grazing. We are moving every day, and then we're recording which group of animals is moving, how many head is in that group, where they're moving to, what the forage height is going into a paddock, what the forage height is going out, and then any other notes that kind of are associated with that. So yeah, we're keeping a lot of records on that, basically, and which is actually nice because I've kind of been curious about that, but it's been hard to justify keeping that tight of records in the past, but getting paid for it makes me want to do it more.
Yeah. That always helps.
I say too, with from NRCS's perspective, helping producers get to prescribed grazing is the goal, and the fencing, the water lines, all of the other infrastructure pieces are there to support the prescribed grazing. Because from our perspective, that's the conservation practice right there. Uh-huh. You're getting more forage production out of the same land. You're getting more carbon put into the ground because when you're doing prescribed grazing or a rotational grazing scheme, your root systems are getting a lot bigger, and you're not cutting the forage down to the point where it's sloughing off those roots. Mm-hmm. You're allowing them to keep that reserve, and they can rebound quicker then too. And when you have plants out there with bigger root systems, with more actual intact forage on the ground, you're getting less soil erosion, you're getting less compaction issues, you're getting more better microbe habitat as well, all sorts of benefits.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Brandon. And you had brought up a point when we were walking out and looking at the grazing system and the high tunnel that NRCS helped get established here. Sometimes farmers are frustrated that certain infrastructure can't be set up, but the NRCS has a certain kind of mission or rule about what they can provide funding for. Can you explain? I think that's a really important piece to keep in mind for folks who might be frustrated with, I'm not successful in getting a certain piece of infrastructure set up.
Yeah, I think a lot of beginning farmers get frustrated with that when they're trying to get infrastructure put in and we can't just come in and help them do that from the get-go. Our goal as an agency is to be solving environmental resource concerns, and so we need to be solving some kind of existing problem as justification to use taxpayer dollars to come in and help out with stuff. Yeah. So we're looking at issues related to soil health, water quality, air quality, and numerous other factors, but those things have to be existing problems in the system that we're addressing in order for us to come in and help. Yeah. We're not just helping farms build their infrastructure from scratch.
Yeah. And related to that, Emily Klaus talked about a suggestion you had for folks. There's a lot of beginning farmers here or prospective wannabe beginning farmers here. And one of the pieces of suggestion you had for them about working with programs like this is maybe don't try to jump right into it right away, but learn what you like doing, what's working on your land, yep, and then kind of go to the NRCS and say, okay, this is what rather than get tied into, for example, a long-term contract on prescribed grazing, and maybe you figure out, oh, that doesn't really work for this farm.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we tried to do a lot of things when we first started and had a lot of ideas on what we wanted to do and what farming would look like. And, you know, a lot of those things, like some things we like got more passionate about and did better and are still doing, and a lot of things we dropped and we're like, this doesn't make sense for our systems or what we're doing or kind of our ideas on what this could like look like is just not the reality. And so really getting a clear idea of like what you actually want to do by like putting it into practice is crucial before just like jumping in and like throwing all your eggs into a basket and then like taking on responsibilities through these programs if you don't actually have the capacity to fulfill them. What Brandon was mentioning a second ago about just like the infrastructure being there to make these practices more possible, I just say that's absolutely true. Like our capacity to do rotational grazing is way increased from what it was before, as far as just the amount of labor and just like little things like having water lines that are going out to the pasture where we can just like plug in our water tank and it fills up, as opposed to like hauling water where if you have a machine that breaks down or something happens, suddenly you don't have water going out there. It eats up a lot of your time trying to figure out what to do with the animals, and then you got to put them somewhere where they have access to water, and then those areas are going to get degraded more. And just like vehicle use in general, like when they're in the areas that we've like worked with the NRCS for getting this infrastructure in, I can just like ride my bike out there now to do animal chores, whereas before it's like I'd have to like fill up 120 gallons of water on a machine, and I mean it's like a whole thing.
Yeah. So. Well, especially you're doing vegetables as well, and I mean that's labor intensive enough, so like adding a livestock enterprise, anything you can do to save labor must be huge.
Well, yeah, I mean it's my opinion that the like kind of like the traditional nuclear family farm model that we have in this country is completely idiotic. It's not sustainable, and I don't encourage anybody, I would not wish that on anyone. So yeah, it's a lot of labor, and you need a lot of people who are interested in doing that labor and have buy-in on it, which is why we're working towards a collaborative farm model and not just trying to do it as like a little family out here doing this. And there's a lot of potential on the land too. It's like there's certain limits on land when you're using it as far as like how much you can do for say grazing, but within that there's also a lot more potential that just a couple people working on can't actually realize, where you have more people, you still have certain limits on like how many animals can be there, but then you can have other people doing other sorts of enterprises and projects on the same piece of land but overlapping and just using land and a lot just like a lot more conservation-minded, honestly, where you have more of a deeper relationship with the land if you have people who are, like, invested in it in that sort of way. So we're trying to move more in that direction.
Do you recall some of the enterprises you dropped that you were like, this ain't working?
Pigs and chickens. Uh-huh. I mean, I think we had some ideas on, like, what is raising those animals look like in kind of a sustainable way, and I mean, the fact of the matter is if you're raising those animals for meat, you've got to, well, like for chickens, it's like you've got to feed a lot of grain. And so you're like growing like monocropped a lot of times, just like you're doing commodity grain production, which is in itself like often a human food, but then you're feeding it to a chicken, right, and just like the amount of like resource that goes into that. And then I could go off on my own like tangents on these things, but my personal thing with chickens is like they, like I think laying hens are like, I've got a lot of respect for them, but the meat chickens, even like the heritage breed ones or whatever, they've been bred for meat production and honestly the brains have been bred out of them. If I can't like have a minimal level of respect for the animals that I'm raising, I don't feel like I should be doing that. And so it's like having like these grass-fed animals and like the sheep and cattle, like these animals are great and like work really well with our systems, and like chickens just were not doing it. Pigs, it's a whole thing too. Like they evolved in a different ecosystem than we can provide them, and I think they make sense in places where you have a specific farm waste, like our friends at Turnip Rock, where they do grass-fed cheese production, so they have a lot of whey, and that's a great pig food. So you raise pigs and you can feed them this excess farm product that you're producing anyway, and you have a good way to like grow food with it. But if you're just buying in grains, it's like, well, what's the point?
Yeah.
In my opinion.
I gotta say, if somebody who has been around hogs a long time, they do have a lot of brain power there.
It's a lot just, of brain power?
Yeah, I would say, yeah. I respect their brain power.
I have a lot of respect for pigs. I would not equate them to meat birds at all. Yeah. Those are definitely different, totally different like scales of like where they're at. Pigs, I've got a huge amount of respect for, but I don't think they make sense in our system, basically.
So I think that's a good point, though, that it backs up this idea that you don't jump into some programs right away until you figure out what is working, what you like to do, that kind of thing. So with your sheep and your, are you doing with the, is it a cow-calf operation or what's your beef cattle? It's a cow-calf operation. And in the sheep, what's your market for that?
I mean, we've got a flock of ewes and then we're lambing every year and then slaughtering those lambs and doing direct market at farmers market. And then we do direct sales like to CSA customers, or we'll do deliveries to the cities once in a while, and people come and buy meat off the farm. We've got like quite a few customers who like we have a relationship with, and they find us various ways, and just it's pretty much all direct market.
How long were you farming here before you did start applying for your first programs that you felt like, okay, we're ready to figure out what we really need support on?
I think we did some like exploratory like stuff pretty like a couple years in, but we didn't, I think we put up with a high tunnel in 2018.
Okay.
So that was 4 years into being here.
So that's a good, you were kind of figuring out, that's a good point. So Brandon, what would be some suggestions you would have for somebody who is a beginning farmer and are, they're just getting established on some land? What's some of the first steps they should take as far as approaching the NRCS and kind of, I don't know, getting familiar with that program, because it can be, and you were very honest, I appreciate this. You said, yes, it is a lot of paperwork. you were honest about that, because that is a big complaint, and that's the way it is. But yeah, what would be your suggestion for people just starting to dip their toes in the water a little bit? It sounds like one of them is, get established for a few years to figure out what works and what doesn't work for you.
Yeah, I think getting established is good. If you want to start an early relationship with people at the USDA office, that's always good. And inviting people from NRCS out to see your operation, talk about what your potential goals are. And if you're having issues that you're currently experiencing, talk through those and see if there's some help for them. But when we're talking about larger infrastructure projects that can potentially set your farm up for the long term, you definitely want to have a good idea of what you like to do when you're farming, what your market's going to be like, and hopefully have a decent idea of what your 5 to 10 year business plan is going to be. Because you don't want to come to us and get set up with a full grazing system and get locked into that system and then realize 2 years down the road that the system doesn't work right for you.
Right.
You should have designed it different from the get-go. And having that experience, just either bootstrapping it for a while by setting up temporary fencing or doing whatever you need to do to make sure it's working out at the beginning, to give yourself that good experience with animals that you're raising or produce that you're growing, can be a huge benefit to you in the long term.
Yeah, and the you mentioned a business plan. Is that something that's really helpful for the NRCS to see, is a business plan? Or what kind of, I guess, paperwork or, what are they looking for from the farmer when they come in there?
We don't necessarily look for a business plan. If we're starting to get into infrastructure stuff, we talk about if there is a business plan, what kind of animal numbers it's going to take for you to be sustainable as a business for cash flow and to pay for infrastructure needs and to support yourself for how you need to be supported. The larger USDA ecosystem, does like to see business plans sometimes. If you start talking about getting into farm loans mm-hmm. or micro loans, they'll want to see that kind of stuff. And along those lines, having a good plan and just trying to do the best record keeping you can do is going to help you when you start talking with us, and it's going to help your business in the long run too. Yeah.
What's roughly, I know it varies, but from the time you start applying to the time you actually get that support, what's the timeline? Is that a bad question to ask?
It depends on when you're coming in the sign-up cycle, but don't expect to get any financial support that year. Usually when you sign up, it can often take a year before the funding cycle comes to a close, mm-hmm. and we actually know who's getting funded. And in those cases, sometimes it can take multiple years of being in those funding pools and not getting funded until you actually do get funded. And beyond that, it becomes it's an evolving relationship. You know, you don't want to tackle everything you want to do with us at first. Do a contract here. We'll build off of it in later contracts down the road. We have ways to kind of graduate people into other programs to be a partner with them throughout a good chunk of their farming career.
Klaus, it sounds like maybe the paperwork can be a headache, and you had to figure out what you liked and what you didn't like, but some of these practices you've been able to put in, you wouldn't have been able to do it without this program. Is that fair to say? Or would you have figured out a way to do it otherwise?
I mean, this is how we want to farm, and it's made it a lot more doable, I guess. I don't know what we would be doing otherwise. We'd be spending a lot more labor trying to make things work, basically. And so just having the basic infrastructure. I mean, I think that's been a big priority for us, is just getting infrastructure in place so that we can do what we want to do. And it's like, we're basically like, you know, I think a lot of folks, us included, or at least me included, like getting into this sort of thing, you're kind of like, oh, I'm just going to do it on my own. And this whole like myth of like the individual just like going out and surviving and being self-sustaining is like total BS. And like the way the whole economy works, and especially agriculture, is it's all like runs through the system. So it's like, you're not like, there's no free market.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm concerned, it's like you leverage the resources that are available in the best ways that you can. And so we're looking at whatever we can, whether it's from the NRCS, FSA, if there's like grants or just like whatever's out there, like we're like kind of ear to the ground, and like how can we like find resources that make the work we're trying to do possible, while also like there's just the reality of doing all the work too. So it's obviously, it's like we're not like a nonprofit who has like the resources to like go find all this stuff, but it is like just like staying in certain networks where we can figure out what resources are available. A lot of this just like doesn't work without it, and it cannot be competitive
right.
in like the larger sort of like food ecosystem.
Yeah, one more point to that too. Like Klaus had mentioned this earlier on the tour, but use the government employees that you're working with. Like their job is to be the liaison between the producer and the farm programs.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're here for. Yeah. And the programs can be a bit complicated and convoluted, sometimes even for the government employees themselves, but that's our job.
I mean, that's totally my approach of like, I will like find the resources available, what the programs are, and my approach is I go and I talk to whoever the agent is or the person like running the program, and I'll ask them what's available. If I have questions though, my instinct is to just like call up one of the agents and just ask them.
Right.
That's going to be a lot quicker and more reliable than me trying to like fumble through the paperwork and like understand it all. Honestly, it's like I'm just going to call the person and they're going to tell me the answer, and then I can just like do that. And I just really encourage people like not be overwhelmed by the paperwork, but to just like see it as like that's sort of the necessary evil of the system that we're working in. And there are a lot of really great employees working for these agencies who are like very helpful.
Yeah. You said, don't be afraid to badger them with questions. That's what they kind of get paid for.
Yeah.
And a lot of people try to look online for our resources, and you know, it's a countrywide programs that we run. So the online information isn't very well tailored to what the specific states or counties are doing. So maybe do a little perusing online, but really the best thing to do is just call up your local office and talk with them directly. We get stuff tailored to the state level and to the area level. Mm-hmm. And so whatever might be saying on the national website might not necessarily be true on the local office.
I just have a general observation from the many years I've been writing about and working around some of these programs. I get a sense that the NRCS is much more, I hate to use this term, but friendlier toward maybe the regenerative ag systems and the something that's not the mainstream conventional corn and soybean system. I mean, it just feels like it's, I don't know.
I mean, I think that's kind of why they exist. I mean, it's a Natural Resources Conservation Service, right?
Part of this is they changed the name. It used to be the Soil Conservation Service. Yeah. And so it was soil conservation. So somebody who's doing 1,000 acres of corn that puts in terraces is considered doing good soil conservation. Right. This is just my opinion. I feel like it's become, now it's called the Natural Resources Conservation Service. There, that is maybe part of its mission now is to look at a bigger picture of not just putting in a single practice, but looking, maybe taking a more holistic approach to resource conservation.
I'd say that the current administration has done a really good job of really trying to promote access to its programs to smaller producers, producers who are historically underserved. That's been a huge push of this administration, and we're seeing a lot of results of that. We also got a lot more funding through the Inflation Reduction Act to our agency. Mm-hmm. It almost doubled our budget. So, and a lot of that got earmarked for beginning farmers and to work on climate smart practices and to work with historically underserved producers. That being said, we work with everybody. You know, we, our goal is to kind of protect the public, well, protect the land in general, mm-hmm. and in general, the ability to use it for resources and look at that from a public perspective of protecting those goods. And so anyone who's willing to come to the table and talk to us about ways to have cleaner water, ways to have less soil erosion, ways to sequester more carbon. We're here to help.
For more on resources available to help farmers build environmentally positive infrastructure in their operations, see the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 356 at landstewardshipproject.org. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. It helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendell, Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.